on digital radio, on the app, on your smart speaker, on Twitter, YouTube, Twitch.tv, and Facebook. The Sportscast. Summer of Soccer.
The update presented by The Sportscast.
The Sportscast, July 8th, 2024. If you haven't yet, please subscribe in all our channels, YouTube, Twitch, X, and Apple Podcasts. You can also listen to us on your smart speaker. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave a rating and a review. It will help us out tremendously. We're also on online radio. You can visit our website, thesportscast.net, or follow us on X at thesportscast1, also Instagram, and check out our app, The Sportscast for iOS. A weekend of soccer. It was a tremendous quarter finals, of course. A few boring snooze fests, but we got our final four for both tournaments, the Euros and the Copa America. And join us to recap, rehash all this. How helps? Welcome back to the Sportscast.
Cheers, Santi. Great to be here as always.
How Phillips? What a weekend! How did you handle 4th of July and watching these two big tournaments?
Well, 4th of July itself, I played golf, and then we had a get-together. So there wasn't – if there was soccer on that day, I can't remember what it was. But the I think the quarterfinals started Friday, and Friday and Saturday were just two incredible days, you know. Big-time games during the day, big-time games that night from the Copa. You can't ask for a whole lot more, and it was really hot up here. Stultifyingly hot for us Mainers on Saturday. So basically I lay on the couch, not moving very much. And it worked out great.
Worked out for me great. Had some barbecue, watched some Copa, some Euros during the day. It felt like I was being lazy, but hey, you know, a lot of these matches were pretty not boring snooze fest, but it was getting there, to be honest. And one of the matches that went to the penalty shootout was England versus Switzerland, where England reached their third semifinal in four tournaments when Trent Alexander-Arnold slammed home the decisive penalty to give them an emotional shootout victory over Switzerland after the teams had drawn 1-1 in the tense quarterfinal this past weekend. There was Switzerland went up 1-0 in the 75th minute, and then a decisive tie by Bukayo Saka from Arsenal 5 minutes later. And then England prevailed in penalty shootout with a save from the goalkeeper, which was a great save, actually. What were your thoughts over this match? England prevails again.
England is one of those teams that no one is lacking for an opinion on. They either are hated or everyone wants them in the tournament. I tend to think that both of those stances mean the same thing. You want England in there to shit on, and you want England in there to root for. I guess I root for England more than I'm and annoyed by them, but they're a funny, funny team internationally that sort of feels like it should waltz into tournament semifinals. And honestly, they've started to do that of late under Gareth Southgate. Everyone gives him a hard time for, you know, not winning anything yet, but they've never been to this many tournament semis and finals in such a small period. So he's done well. But yeah, their play is not attractive. They tend to want to hold the ball and knock it around between center backs, probing, you know, for way through some team that's parking the bus in front of them. Switzerland did that, but they complicated the matter by scoring themselves. They're much more capable going forward than previous opponents, Slovakia included. So same kind of game. You know, England gets into a situation where they're patiently waiting and patiently probing. Boom, they're down 1-0 and panic sets in. So in that way, I thought the game was fascinating. Twice in a row, England has had to come back and tie the score and win in extra time, and they did it both times. You can't really complain about the performance. And I think one of the things that people don't talk about enough is that this team is super deep. They bring on 5, 6, 7, 8 guys. All of them are great, capable going forward, can defend in a pinch, as we saw, because you know, you sub on 5 guys to try to score against Switzerland. England scored right away, but they scored. They had 3 new players on there. Well, you had to integrate those guys into an actual alignment going forward because you had basically thrown caution to the wind. That stuff is fascinating to me. There's a difference, I think, between a 1-1 game that goes to penalties in a tournament of this magnitude and a boring soccer game. Of course, 0-0 is worse. And I thought Brazil versus Uruguay was stultifying soccer. I did not like it. But England versus Switzerland was fun. There was all sorts of drama. And love them or hate them, ending games on penalties is dramatic. Purists say, oh, that's not a soccer technique. Those aren't the ways to decide games. Those aren't soccer skills they're exhibiting. They're tests of nerve. They're tests of skill. They're tests of ambitions. They're tests of depth, you know, when half your team is subbed off. I think there's a lot going on in a game like that, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, I agree. Now just reminiscing of what you said and recapping this game. Again, the game was not too bad compared to the other ones like Brazil and Uruguay, which we'll get later. Jordan Pickford was the one that saved the penalty against Manuel Akanji, which he plays for Man City, I believe. So that was a great win by England. On to the semifinals where they play the winner, Netherlands, who beat Turkey 2-1. They came from behind as well. After a goal from Turkey's Mert Muldur, own goal. And then, of course, Samuel Akkadiyen headed home after 35 minutes at the – wait, no, this is the wrong notes here. But Holland scored again to tie the game, then scored again 2-1, which Gavco had a lot going on there as well. Netherlands are in the Final Four. Your thoughts over this match?
This was just outright scintillating, you know, match to watch. There was no caveat required here. Turkey came out flying and traded punches with the Netherlands. They both had chances to score, and the Turks scored first, and they didn't exactly go into a shell, although they did defend like demons, and the Netherlands looked like they were running out of ideas, only they tied it, and then they ended up going ahead before extra time came. So it was did that game go to extra time?
No, it did not. Full time.
That's
regulation.
Right.
Yeah.
They scored two goals in short order, and boom, all of a sudden the Turks had to go forward. And I'll be damned if the Turks did not generate 3 incredible chances to score in the last 5 minutes of that game. It was a great entertainment for everyone, and neutrals included. And I'm definitely a neutral when it comes to Netherlands, Turkey. I don't know. The tournament shows that you have agency. Turkey scores a goal. They didn't go into a shell. They didn't park the bus, but they said, we're going to protect what we have. They took it on the chin over and over again. As soon as they went down 2-1, they were hell-bent for leather again, and they were going forward and honestly should have scored. It was an incredible display, and it shows you how much agency is the only word I can come up with. Switzerland showed the same thing. When they went behind, all of a sudden they come out of their shell, and they trade punches, and the game lights up. You sort of wish that teams would take this tack a little more seriously throughout the game. And I understand tactics. I understand you're playing, you know, maybe what you perceive to be a superior opponent. But what happens if you score twice against England before going into a shell and parking the bus? Why not? Canada showed us, I think, the value of buccaneering play. They could have had 5 against Venezuela, and they just kept going forward. And they ended up having to win that game on penalties. But, geez, they're so confident in their ability to go forward now. We could talk more about the Copa when we get to it. But,
yeah,
the Netherlands England game is going to be very, very interesting because neither of those teams really is going to park the bus on the other. I think they both want the ball at their feet, so they're going to be eager to, you know, take it as opposed to giving it up and countering. I don't know what is going to happen there, and that's what makes a semifinal at a major tournament so interesting. You've got the elites playing each other. What happens when there's no obvious underdog? Who decides they don't want the ball and would rather counter? I can't answer that question. I don't think anybody can.
That's right. There's no underdogs, no Turkey. There's no Morocco. What happened in the World Cup a couple years ago. So we'll see what happens, as Hal said. Want to clarify, Kayadin from Turkey scored in 35th minute. Then Holland scored to tie it in 7th minute by the Ridge. And then a own goal by Mordir Turkey made it 2-1 for Netherlands. So quite exciting match there. Let's go to the other one. A lot of Euros today, so bear with us here. Spain defeating Germany 2-1. A goal by Mikel Merino sent Spain into semifinal. They scored in extra time.
Yeah.
Florian Wirtz from Germany tied the game at the 89th minute towards the end of the regulation. It was a pretty close game, but the hosts are out. Omo actually scored in the 51st minute, and Reno in the 119th minute to win the game. But your thoughts over this heavyweight match?
Well, shout out to my editor Esteban, who loves España and wanted Dani Olmo to play in this game, and he did, and he changed them. He was better than Morata, you know, as the central sort of striker around whom the wingers can attack and dip in and out. And he scored the first goal 51 minutes on, and Spain looked very comfortable, to be honest. It looked like they had this game won twice. They gave up a very late goal in the 89th minute to Florian Wirtz, who's, you know, the main striker for Bayer Leverkusen, the German Bundesliga champions. Great little player. I really enjoyed watching him in this context. He's very, very clever. And with Musiala, they have two great strikers going forward, but they're out because they tied this game and looked like they were going to penalties, which so much of this stuff goes to type. Santi, you know, we think that we know Germany. We think that we know they're going to come back. They did. We think that it's going to go to penalties and they're going to win on penalties because they've done it so often. Well, Spain didn't sit back and go for penalties. They won it in the 119th minute with a great goal, just as everyone was sort of settling in and getting ready for that penalty kick drama. I don't know. That's pretty compelling. And that's the other thing about international football, playing against type. You know, the British are supposed to be terrible. The British, the English are supposed to be terrible penalty takers. I haven't seen five better penalties as a group taken in a single match of that magnitude, maybe ever. They were perfect. So you just can't ever tell in this game. And that's why we won. Spain and Germany. What a great game that was. Probably the best quarterfinal of the whole bunch. And part of it was because everyone played against type. The Germans came back and tied this game like we expect them to do. But then they lost it before they could get to penalties and win it. That's what they're known for, is winning games on penalties and coming back from deficits to do it. And for that matter, that's what made England so fascinating. They're supposed to be the worst penalty takers in the world. They've lost so many tournaments at penalties. Well, they had five of the most beautiful penalties I've ever seen to beat Swiss. So Spain, I think, is the class of this tournament still. They've scored twice now from open play against the Germans at home. They've only improved their confidence going forward. They're the clear favorites against Spain, or rather against France, on Tuesday night.
Speak of France, they won in a penalty shootout, 5-3. Regulation score was 0-0. It was not much going on in this match, but I will say that the decisive kick was Portugal's João Félix, who came in as a substitute and who struck the woodwork. But France, also another highlight was Mbappe, that came out out of the match because he hit his nose again with his mask on, and so he had to be relieved a bit. But France was able to pull off this win in penalties. They have not scored an open play, Hal.
Nope. They have not scored from open play. Their country appears to pull itself back from a right-wing ascension politically, so maybe they're unburdened now and they can score some goals going forward. It's got to have been difficult for that team to play in this tournament, in this spotlight, while this political crucible is happening all across their country. France is a massive melting pot, like the United States is, with people from all over the place, citizens born in this country, but with parents from away, born in other places, they've been naturalized. And, you know, the anti-immigration stance of the right-wing government in France was prepared to take office. It appears that has been pulled back from the brink thanks to Sunday's vote. But I like Mbappe and France to do better against Spain, but I'm still going to pick Spain. More interesting to me was what you said. It's really about sacred cow management at this stage of a tournament. Mbappe is the world's best striker. Everyone agrees. I love the way the French coach Didier Deschamps took Mbappe off in the overtime of that game, tied 0-0. the worst quarterfinal of all the Euros. No goals, not a lot of pressure. Either way, no intensity, into the overtime, into penalties. But before that, Mbappe was pulled off. He could have taken a penalty, but he wasn't himself. He played badly. They brought somebody else on, and they won. Cristiano Ronaldo stayed on. He played the entire game, and he was worthless. And they ended up getting a penalty from him, and they lost anyway because João Felix missed one. Never looked like he wanted to be there. But Harry Kane came off when England had to go to penalties, or when because they have other guys. Sacred cow management. Portugal, they get an F. France and England, A+. And they were rewarded for their perseverance.
Well, yeah, there you have it. France advances in penalties. They're going to face Spain next, so it'll be quite a matchup. Let's go into Copa America. Probably Colombia had the most scoring going on goals. They beat Panama 5-0. James Rodriguez stole the show with a goal and 2 assists. But Colombia breezed into the semifinal of the Copa America. Your thoughts over that matchup?
Colombia looks as good as Uruguay in this tournament. It's a shame they're not playing each other directly. Oh, wait, they are. That's going to be a great match. Canada, Argentina, not so much. But, yeah, Colombia was never threatened by Panama, and we knew they would. It hurts to watch that, to know that a 10-man U.S. lost to Panama, and that ruined the tournament for the United States and may get Greg Berhalter fired, and we're seemingly back to square one with this team 2 years ahead of the World Cup. But all props to Colombia. They were great. They've been great. I think they've won 27 straight games. They are a fearsome opponent for Uruguay. It's going to be a great match.
Great match. Goals by Cordoba, Rodriguez, Diaz, Rios, and Borja in the penalty. So good job for Colombia. Another match of the quarterfinals, Uruguay defeating Brazil 4-2 after they were 0-0 in the relegation. Brazil were dumped out early on, and Uruguay was running on a 10-man team when Nahitan Nandez had a red card. But they won in penalties. It was a great shootout. Sergio Roche saved from Elder Militao before Douglas Luiz struck the post. And though Jose Jimenez squandered Uruguay's first chance to win it, Manuel Ugarte made no mistake with their next attempt to go on to face Colombia next.
Yeah, different tournament format here. No added extra time after 90 minutes of regulation at the Copa America. They go straight to penalties. I think everyone's hammies appreciate that on the field. It's a lot of wear and tear and a lot of games with very little rest. So the overtimes, how often do they produce a winner? Well, Spain got one, but not often. So here we are. This was a brutal match to watch. It really was no fun at all. There were 42 fouls called, I believe. It was just one, sort of elicited dramatic foul taking after another, and it got pretty old. And I guess partly because our expectations for the game, or mine, were so high. I was really excited to see this match. But, you know, one of the things that we have to remember is Uruguay can go forward, but they're grinders. They win games like this routinely. And just because Bielsa is their coach and they're playing a little bit more attacking doesn't mean that they are the last team you want to play with a place in the semifinals on the line. The other thing takeaway for me was this Brazil team just wasn't very good. I know we're spoiled for star power when it comes to the Seleção. And this team, you know, I was looking at it. Bruno Guimarães is, in the midfield. Paqueta from West Ham. That's Newcastle and West Ham right there in the middle of the Brazilian midfield. And Douglas Luiz from Villa, nice player, but he hits the post and you lose. These aren't the great players we're used to seeing coming out of Brazil. They're fine players. No Neymar, no Ronaldo, no Romario. No star power and sort of an ordinary team, and the better team beat them. 10 men, luckily, Uruguay went down to 10 with about 8 minutes to go, and they were able to hang on and get to penalties. But once it went to penalties, I had no doubt that they were going to prevail. They're just stronger mentally.
Yeah, not really exciting Brazil team. No Vinny, of course. No. We saw more Endrick, but Endrick did not come through. He had a few good plays here and there, but what are your thoughts? You prefer the no extra time, or you prefer with the extra time versus going straight to penalties?
The one thing you do avoid by nixing the 30 minutes of extra time is the last 10 minutes of regular time are contested right to the end. And the teams aren't quite so, fatigued. I mean, that's really the issue. You're either just absolutely dead tired or you've subbed on six guys who have hardly played and they have trouble meshing. This worked to everyone's advantage as a viewer in the World Cup final. The added extra time between Argentina and France was maybe the best 30 minutes of overtime I've ever seen in my life. But Uruguay and Brazil just got worse and worse. I guess I don't have a preference. I think the players appreciate going right to penalty kicks. It seems a bit gimmicky to do that. I never played in a tournament that did that. There was always some form of extra time, even if it was, 10 minutes on each way, it was truncated somehow. I don't know. I like the extra time. Cause especially now that they have so many subs, they should be able to manage their fatigue a little bit better, but I don't know. It's 6-1 and half a dozen of the other, but I was thinking while we were trying to get our Wi-Fi back, There was a one dud out of four in each tournament when it came to the quarterfinals, because I thought Canada-Venezuela was great fun, if not the most artful display. But Brazil and Uruguay was definitely highest expectations, lowest production value.
Yeah, and they say 30% of the time teams win extra time, and the 70% of the time win in penalties.
30% of the time, who wins? What?
Usually a match is decided in extra time, 30% of the time.
30% of the time and 70% they go to penalties. That's right. About right. That seems right.
So
I think that, I think that's preferable, but as the longer the tournament goes, the less viable that becomes. I mean, those 30 minutes take a toll on anybody over 22 years old. And by the way, Endrick, I thought was not good. I thought that they should have taken him off. They had to have someone else to come in. He seemed really intent on playing with his back to goal and showing how he can shield the ball, maybe showing that he's not a young man, a small, 17-year-old undeveloped physical player. But, geez, he threw himself around and couldn't even get a call from the referee. It was so unconvincing. And he kept on inviting contact. And I just don't know that is his game, but I don't know his game. He's 17. I've never seen him before. Played a proper match, but he didn't impress me.
Yeah, did not impress me as well. Was not that Ronaldo R9 type of feel, but We'll see what happens. Only 18 years old, so we'll see what happens when he does in Real Madrid. You mentioned Venezuela, Canada. Canada defeated Venezuela in penalties 4-3. Ishmael Kone sent Canada to the first Copa America semifinal as they overcame Venezuela 4-3 in a penalty shootout following a 1-1 draw. Jacob Schoffelberg opened the scoring for Canada. And then Wilker Angel, and then Venezuela tied it up to make it 1-1 by Salomon Rondon, and of course penalties. Hey, Jesse Marsh, he's definitely your thoughts over this match, and then Jesse Marsh.
Well, the match itself was incredibly exciting. I mean, there were lots of chances. It was back and forth. The Canadians, especially, could have had 4, 5, 6 goals. As it was, they only got one. And they had to hang on through penalties to win the damn thing. But I thought they showed a real buccaneering spirit. One of the things that made the Canada, national team from 2022, the one that qualified for the World Cup in Qatar, what made that team really fun was they went forward and they scored goals. They gave up goals, but they went forward and tried to score goals. They seem to have regained that under Marsh. That's the way he coaches, and that they play an open game. And they score goals. They make chances. They really created a ton of space against Venezuela, who I thought looked sort of poor and didn't have any understanding of how to control this match or their opponent. As it was, though, Canada's touch was terrible. Kyle Larin and Jonathan David, two of their top strikers. These are big players. They play in La Liga. They play for Lille in France. They're good strikers. I've seen them play very well. They were terrible in this match. Their touch, the touch for the Canadians overall in the midfield was terrible. They just kept missing traps and can't hit a wide open guy, laterally 10 yards away. They just did not play well in that way. And unfortunate for them, neither did Venezuela, who everyone had billed to me as a coming force in South American soccer. They looked bad. In the end, it's hard to ignore the quality of the play in this game. But Canada deserved to win. I'm glad they've gone through they're going to get a thrashing, though, against Argentina, I predict, because if they play anywhere like that, you know, against the Argentinians, they will just get skewered. Yeah, it's impossible to watch Canada without watching the style of play introduced by their new coach, who, had he not been hired when he was hired, might be the guy that we're all talking about replacing Greg Berhalter.
Right.
This is not lost on either gentleman. And there was some fun trash talk between the two of them in June before this tournament started. And boy, that just makes Berhalter look worse and worse at this point. The cattiness back then, and the fact that Marsh's team is in the semifinal and Berhalter's didn't even get out of the group.
It's quite, what a story.
Yeah, it's pretty juicy. I don't know what the U.S. does from here. I don't think anyone knows. It's a little like Joe Biden at this point. Greg Berhalter may, you know, have some control over this, in that if he wants to end it and step down after 6 years, that's a long time to be in charge of anyone's national team. This would be the time to do it. But I don't think he has any prospects outside of MLS when it comes to coaching elsewhere. And maybe he's just convinced that he can do the best job, just like Joe does. It's an interesting situation. I sort of expect them to turn him loose. Why wouldn't they? Ecuador. You know, I don't know anything about Ecuador in soccer, but I thought they played well against Argentina. I thought they played well in this tournament in a difficult group. And they lose to Argentina on penalties. They fired the coach the next day.
I know. No
this
thoughts.
Is sort of the way it works.
No revaluation?
No.
Process? Nothing?
No.
You cut the loose goose. I mean, cut the goose loose. It's incredible.
I'm not sure what the U.S., you know, the U.S. Soccer Federation can do other than get rid of Berhalter. If they keep him on, I mean, they are going to depress interest in this team and the program. They really will.
Well, that segues perfectly to this segment. Doug McIntyre from Fox Soccer was saying that a lot of people took the news decision being made this week as a sign that Greg Berhalter was not coming back. He said, I can tell you that no decision has been made. A couple of candidates, if Greg Berhalter cuts loose, it would be Steve Cherundolo. It is an option. There is a Jurgen Klopp rumor, Hal. There is apparently Tim Howard has connections. And also Emma Hayes has connections to Jurgen Klopp. But if was cut this week, Cherundolo, who coaches LAFC, his first season as a head coach, by the way, he will be the first guy to turn to. But let's first talk about Greg Berhalter. A lot of noise. The American Outlaws is making noise. Some other support groups in the U.S. circles are making noise. They don't not want Greg Berhalter out. I mean, yes, they do want him out. Also, Pulisic wants to keep him, apparently. What's your thoughts over this whole drama?
Well, in many ways, I believe that Berhalter and his tenure were served by the fact that the players like him and the players play for him. They work for him. They sacrifice for him for whatever reason. Everyone but Reyna seems to like the guy. And that's not nothing, but that is a reason you hire somebody and see how they do. After 6 years and not a single victory over a top 15 team in the world other than Mexico, it looks like a terrible reason to keep someone in the position. But the problem is, you know, what if you believe that's the problem, that we have a coach that's too familiar, not getting the results you want, but also that the players are just a little too comfortable. And also this guy has no international experience outside his stint as your coach, really zero. The guy that they've got to get must have some kind of international experience. He must bring some other set of tactics and evaluation systems that are internationally based, because we're playing an international game here. You know, the guy who fits that to a T is Klopp, and I would love to see that. I've been saying this for a year and a half. I think you've heard me say it. It was really, you know, I was saying it before Klopp, you know, said he was going to leave. I'm like, he'd be perfect, because he's got to get tired of listening to all that carping, you know, from the Liverpool people. He's won. He can't win enough anymore. He should come over here and relax like Klinsmann did and take over this team. Now that he's out of a job there, or left that job, then it's even more, delectable, but I can't see him taking the job. It just doesn't make sense to me that he would leave a job and take one so quickly. A year from now, maybe 6 months from now, maybe in the middle of the EPL season when he sees he's missing it. And then the pool of people that are, available who are of international caliber to take this team, it gets very, very thin, very, very fast. Cherundolo appears to be a promising coach in MLS, which produced Bearhalter. We can't hire another MLS guy to coach this team. We have to have someone who can whip an international side. Again, it doesn't make a difference that they're American or Portuguese. You have people coming in from all different clubs. You have to get them together in a camp and organize them in a simple but effective tactical way. It's a very different discipline than running it like a club. And Bearhalter has run this like a club because his brother was the CEO or the CFO of the Federation for a long time, and he knew his job was secure. I guess that's good, because that was, continuity and all that, but that's over. And I can't see them bringing in Jim Curtin or something like that from Philly, who looks like he's a good coach, but geez, they're terrible this year. It seems an odd time for him to leave and take over the national team. There aren't that many international caliber candidates who I think are practical and reasonable candidates for this job. I mean, that list that Doug McIntyre put out, I think I saw it. Who are the non-MLS people on that list?
All I did not see a list. All I saw was Cherundolo and Jurgen Klopp. So, but I've not seen a. I think I heard about that list, but I've not have it pulled up. So,
yep, Curtin was on the list. I almost grabbed it before we got back on here, but I forgot. Jose Mourinho is floating around. I mean, I think that would be a disaster.
He's got a job in Turkey.
That's right. He's got a job in Turkey. This is part of the problem. And how do we start on this conversation? Because Jesse Marsh is now coaching in Canada. If Jesse Marsh was available, I think he'd be in the job right now. And I think everyone knows it. And I think that might be one of the reasons that they can't possibly keep this guy, because every time we play Canada or Canada plays, it's going to become obvious that they got the guy we should have been, courting all along or hiring. It's a weird, weird situation. And again, the Biden thing is interesting to me, because Bearhalter could solve it by just stepping down. This happens after, when there was shame, it's like, I've been here 6 years, completely screwed the pooch on this Copa America thing, which was everyone agreed the test, failed it, get on with your life, go coach someone else and let the national team find someone to take them towards the World Cup. But I don't know. He doesn't seem like that kind of guy either, that he would actually step down.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Candidates I just pull up from Doug McIntyre's list: Wilfred Nancy from Columbus Crew, Bob Bradley, who's coaching Stabæk in the Scandinavian country, David Wagner. I really like that guy to coach for the U.S. men's. He just got let go from his club in England championship. Yep. Thierry Henry, France Olympic team. Hugo Perez, he is jobless right now. Patrick Vieira, who's coaching at Strasbourg in France, Jim Curtin, as Hal mentioned, and Gareth Southgate, who's still coaching for England right now, and of course Steve Cherundolo. But from that list, and of course Jurgen Klopp, from that list, which one stands out to me the most accessible?
Well, the most accessible,
or like the one that's okay, hop on.
Well,
easy hop on.
I guess I'll say two things. One is, I think that in hiring Nancy, who has done so well with the Crew, you are getting an international outlook, but never run a national team. He's a club coach. Vieira, I think he's got capability. Never been a national team coach. Thierry Henry would understand the international game maybe better, but he's never been a national team coach. This just underlines the conversation we've been having. Great coaches don't coach national teams. They coach club teams. That's where the money is. That's where the day-to-day intensity and fun is. And none of the guys in that list get me very excited. Nancy, I think, is a talent, but a completely unproven talent at the international level. So you would say, well, who are the international team coaches? that are going to get the can this year and we might be able to hire. I can't think of one.
Quite troubling. We'll see what happens. First, you know, get rid of Greg Berhalter and then go from there maybe. Or get a candidate lined up and then maybe get rid of Greg
Roberto Berhalter. Martinez, who's coached Portugal, you know, to an exit in the quarterfinals of the Euro. I don't think that Portugal will turn him loose. He was mentioned as someone that would be very telegenic and speaks good English and would be probably an asset to this program. He's done a decent job with Portugal. He did a good job with Belgium, I thought. But I don't think Portugal is going to get rid of him. They were famous for having the same coach, Fernando Santos, in place for 20 years. They don't really toss coaches in and out willy-nilly. It's just looking like a very bad time to be looking for a national team coach, even if you're hosting the tournament and you'll be lavished with, you know, a free hand. I got nothing, Santi, and I think that's the problem. The Federation has nothing.
We'll see what Matt Crocker and U.S. Soccer decide. Hal, predictions, are you ready?
Okay.
Spain versus France, semi-final of the Euros.
I really believe that France is going to score some goals at some point, but I think Spain is playing way, way better than them at this point. So how can you pick against Spain?
Argentina versus Canada.
Argentina.
England. Netherlands versus England.
I'm going to pick the Netherlands, even though I think Virgil van Dijk is getting slow. You're a Liverpool guy. Would you go along with that?
I've seen that the past year or two. He's definitely slowing down.
He still carries himself with great imperiousness, and he's a very good center back. But, man, you can expose him. I think he can be, you know, can be gotten behind. But I don't think England has the balls to throw anybody, even run anybody behind him. So I think the Dutch squeaked that one out. They're getting better.
The luck of the Dutch. And finally, might be the game of the week, Colombia versus Uruguay.
Oh, wow. Well, I would defer to you on this one, but I really want to see Uruguay against Argentina. But I think Uruguay has, you know, they don't have as big a squad as Colombia. And they've got to be getting tired. So I guess I'm going to pick Colombia because they're the hottest team in the world right now. And I would like to see them against Argentina too. I'd like to see them beat Argentina. And I guess what I'm saying when I picked Uruguay first, I think Uruguay has a better chance to beat Argentina mentally. Colombia has got big issues when it comes to playing the big teams in South America, as you know. So I'll pick them to win, and I hope they fare well against the world champions.
Yeah, quite exciting times in Copa America. But yeah, now thinking about it, Argentina, Uruguay, that's a classic Copa America.
It is. Uruguay is such an interesting soccer nation. You know, we were watching Brazil and Uruguay the other night, and I realized, and I sent a thread up on Threads, you know, the reason that Brazil is wearing the shirt they're wearing is because of Uruguay. They beat Brazil in the 1950 World Cup final in Brazil at the Maracanã, and Brazil wore white that day. They've never worn it again because of that loss.
I didn't know that. Wow.
And that was because of Uruguay. Uruguay has won 4 world championships. People don't understand. They think only 2. They have 4 stars on the crest because they are given credit for 2 world championships in the 20s as part of the Olympics.
Yeah.
FIFA recognized them. So there's a 4-time world champion. They've always had sides that were hard to play. When Diego Forlan and that crew was around in 2010, they were World Cup semifinalists. They're just an incredibly interesting and talented side. 3.5 million people turning out all that soccer. It's really quite amazing.
Quite amazing. Quite a week. A lot of 4 matches begin Tuesday. We'll see how many of those will go to penalty shootouts. How many of them you think? 2 out of the 4? 1 out of the 4? Spain, France has a good chance.
There's 4 games left. Spain, France could go to penalty. You really can't say. I just hope that only one of the 3 goes to penalties. And we've had enough. We, you know, the quarterfinals are very, very dicey. No one's playing with a whole lot of freedom because they're just in from the round of, you know, 16. And, you know, they don't even know that they are World Cup timber or an op or European champion timber. Now these guys, they know that they're good. And they know that if they play, they're going to win. So that's an encouragement to play. The only team that I don't see doing that is England. They seem to have such a hard time getting out of their own way. We'll see who they throw out there, too, in terms of a lineup in that semifinal. I have no clue. what Gareth Southgate will do. I sort of don't think he'll do what he's been doing. It's been so worthless until they went down a goal. Those starting teams that he ran out there had nothing.
Saka, incredible. Anyway, yeah. For those four teams in the Euros, England has not won the Euros. The rest of them have. Quite That's interesting. Right. Hal Phelps, what's the best way to reach you online to tell, hey, Hal, should I skip work to watch these games?
GenZero.HalPhillips.net. That's the website for my companion site for my book, Generation Zero. And that also happens to be my Threads handle and my Instagram handle, GenZero.HalPhillips.
There you go. You can reach us at thesportscast.net or thesportscast1 on Instagram and X. We'll be following along, live tweeting Tuesday and Wednesday. Pretty exciting. And this weekend, the back daddy of all the finales for both tournaments. Yeah. Hal, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, the show went on. Thanks for your patience.
The show must go on, Santi. My pleasure.
And this was your update.